series.
We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome to the first news quiz of 2005. We start with a cutting seen in the Gloucestershire Echo, read for us by Harriet Cass.
Wanted bass player for gigging band, must have own teeth.
Thanks to John Talbot of Tewkesbury for that. Let's meet the teams now. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Fred McCauley. And on my left, Alan Corran and Armando Iannucci. Jeremy, why were Labour's top men on message but off schedule?
Her Majesty's Prime Minister, Mr. Anthony Blair, scheduled his press conference for exactly the same moment in history as Gordon Brown was saying something in Scotland, which was a nightmare for all those people who were hoping to catch both live on BBC News 24. And I set the video on both of my televisions for different ones so that I could carry on watching Pingu on UK Gold. And when I rushed out to get my evening paper, I didn't know which story to read first. That's the problem. But yes, Blair said something and Brown said something at the same time in different places to prove that they hate each other. That they're not the same person.
If they follow their itineraries, Blair was in Egypt all last week while Gordon Brown was mouthing off about stuff. And then as soon as Blair comes home, Brown is going off to Africa, which actually shows that they hate each other so much that they cannot bear being in the same time zone.
Is that mouthing off about stuff a direct quote from Tony Blair?
That's from his spokesman. Yes. On some of the news channels, they actually split the screen down, so you got both simultaneously.
It's rather like Doris Day and Rock Hudson in pillow talk.
Tony Blair and Gordon Brown decided to demonstrate their absolute unity on Thursday by speaking to journalists at the same time and on the same topic in completely different locations. Mr. Brown used an article in The Guardian to argue that children should be at the very heart of Labour policy, which is why he would like to see Mr. Blair spending much more time with his family. Fred, who may not be making free with their information, after all?
Is this, I guess it's got the word information and free, is it freedom of information?
2 points.
This is a law that was passed a while ago, but has come into practice now, by which we're entitled to hear all manner of interesting things, like Jim Callaghan didn't like moving to number 10, and some bloke had sore piles aggravated by toilet paper, government issue. And to be honest, I could probably have got through life without knowing those two things for another 30 years.
And the really great story that Fred has glossed over was the fact that there was an MOD plan to put a nuclear bomb in the Channel Tunnel in case anybody invaded us by land. The idea that we're engaged in a war where people are going to say, let's go through the tunnel. Anyway, but they shelled it because they were informed by scientists that if that happened, it would flatten Canterbury. What happens, anything in the tunnel would come out like a cork out of a pop gun, bang, and wouldn't stop till it got to Rill. So,
I think if they'd said that the tunnel explosion would have flattened Motherwell, we might have got it in Scotland.
Did they really think that that people trying to invade us would want to use the Channel Tunnel?
Will be their first thought. They advance in single file. That's it.
Lord Falconer was on. He was in charge of seeing this legislation through, and he was asked about why various government departments had spent the last 4 months leading to this legislation shredding lots of documents. And he said it's really just to be efficient. You know, they wanted to get rid of all the documents that people would have no interest in whatsoever. And I sort of imagined the civil service putting documents into two piles, stuff that was completely harmless and stuff that would cause acute embarrassment. So Gulf War syndrome and all that people don't want to know anything about that. That would be...
It would upset us.
I think
the Home Office will just have a website under this new legislation, and you just get onto their web page, and it'll just say, you don't want to know.
Yes, it's the Freedom of Information Act, which came into force on January the 1st and gives us the right to information from 100,000 public bodies, including central and local government, police, hospitals and schools. Sadly, we still can't expect to find out why our central and local government, police, hospitals and schools are so bloody useless. Armando, which forgotten minority are standing up for the forgotten majority?
Oh, the forgotten majority are all those people who didn't vote Conservative in the last two general elections. Michael Howard launched the first part of the Tory manifesto this week. He's launching it in 5 monthly instalments.
To cherish and enjoy.
First issue's 99 pence, thereafter 4.99.
Month by month will build up into his resignation. except he has said he won't resign. He launched his attempt to win power by saying that he won't resign when they lose. And which is a rubbish tactic. Even Tim Henman turns up for the semi-finals.
This week, the Conservative Party published the first instalment of its manifesto. The Tory leader argued there was a large group of people who feel let down by Tony Blair and who share Tory values. That's just Labour MPs. Alan, listen to this. Alan, who needs a kick up the backside because they can't give a clip round the ear?
I think it's a think tank called Kiwitas. Hmm. If not, and you were differently educated, it's a think tank called Civitas. But it's decided that we have the worst policemen in the world. The problem really is about public image of the police, rather than the actual work they do, because police subsequently came back and said, we did catch 3 burglars in 2003, and we have our sincere doubts about a man who might have been parked on double yellow line last year. And it's really about how we perceive the police.
They were saying that, I felt it was an unfair slight on the police, because they said that the problem is they've moved from a culture of prevention, actually stopping people committing crimes, to one of detection.
You're a Scot. You grew up in a culture where they took you round the corner and slapped you behind the ear, and crime went down in Scotland. I think it's a very good system. As a result of which, everybody in Glasgow is a honourable citizen with no record.
As a punishment, we were lowered into chip pan oil and battered. Detective programmes would be rubbish if they caught the criminals before they did the crime. So I mean, ITV thrives on 2-hour episodes of Morse. But if he caught the criminal before a murder was committed, that would be 5 minutes.
Even the Scots ones are always about a corpse in a raincoat being dragged out of some dreadfully grey Scottish river. And that's all ever happens in Scotland. I mean, policemen smack people behind the ear, and these people are subsequently found floating in the Clyde.
I think you're confusing television with real life.
I was going to point out that you say that's where it always was, and we only ever made one episode. It's repeats.
And to make it look
soon you'll be able to say, I know who did this.
But they keep coming back with different faces. There's this man called Taggart who runs Scotland, and every time I turn on, it's a different bloke with a long barge book. Same corpse is coming out of the river. But the copper on the other end, who's still called Taggart, is the entire family. It's like the mafia, isn't it? I mean, you don't have a police force, you have the Taggart family that just pulls people out of the river.
He's dead. Taggart's dead. It's his quirk. Old policemen have
no
quirks.
No, you're confusing television with reality.
Very easy to run down the police, although not as easy for them to run us down. But I like the cops now, since they decided to start beating up the Countryside Alliance. What gave me so much pleasure was not so much seeing the blood streaming down the heads of the landed gentry, but the look of outrage on their faces. You see every one of them mouthing the word blighter.
Simon, I remember a few years ago doing this very show, and the police came up and I had to declare an interest in that I lived with a policeman for a number of years, or Dad as we used to call him. He had a distinguished career in the police with one blemish where he broke someone's arm taking, as he said, a voluntary statement.
A new report published this week claims British policing is among the worst in the world. The report claims Britain has one of the highest crime rates in the developed world, something we're best at last. And at the end of round one, the scores are everybody's doing incredibly well. Let me start round two with a cutting from the Building and Construction's jobs section of the Evening Standard.
Maintenance fitter based at Buckingham Palace. Candidates should have a nationally recognised apprenticeship with a minimum of 5 years' experience and preferably be Corgi registered.
Thanks to John Pearce of Bath for that. Jeremy, who thinks that captains of industry are good sports?
I don't know. Who thinks captains of industry are good sports? Mm-hmm. Some we fool.
No, it's blokes who captain cricket and rugby and all those other games, prefects, became captains of industry.
Leaders. Became leaders.
Presumably there's been some kind of survey. Mm. And they found people that were good at maths and stuff like that at school and good at sports and were prefects have gone on to be the bosses in these companies, except the lazy arsed ones that sat about doing nothing who've become bosses as long as the company has their surname in the title. They've done not too badly either. Although I have to say, the prefects at our school, when I was a boy, who've gone on to become captains of industry, these are the guys that ran the tuck shop at a loss. With no overheads. They were just handing it out to their pals. Well, some things never change, eh?
It just explains why we have such crap tennis players and soccer players and all the rest. They've gone into industry. All these people who are good at sports at school.
A survey by Murray revealed this week that 9 out of 10 captains of industry had shown their leadership ability at school in the role of head boy, head girl, prefect or sports captain. Many papers claim the study proved a link between being good at sport and being good at business, though not as strong as the link between good at sport and ending up as a PE teacher. Fred, who's not raising a glass to 24-hour drinking?
Crikey, Jeremy, we're getting a doing because I haven't a clue.
Well, basically the problem is they're going to bring in 24-hour drinking and the trouble is that we British...
Hang on, we Scottish, 24 hours? That's a reduction. I'm not happy about this.
I think this is doctors, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. For us
doctors are very upset at changing the licensing laws. It's going to cost millions of pounds, and that's because doctors will be drinking round the clock now.
Thankfully, the drinks industry has recognised the problem of drink driving and now targets their sales on children who, of course, aren't old enough to drive. It's easy for kids now, isn't it? Because we had to acquire a taste of drinking to force your way through pints and pints of old bedwetter. Now they just get some wood alcohol and dissolve a packet of refreshers in it and give it to children.
Is this 24-hour drink, is this obligatory?
Yeah. The whole country will be locked in. But we all have to get into the country before 11 o'clock tonight.
Right.
And then we just stay forever in a drunken stupor.
So in the next election, we just all turn up and just go, I love you, Tony. You're my pal.
The Royal College of Physicians claims that 24-hour pub opening will worsen Britain's drink epidemic. It's hoped that reducing opportunities to drink will help control yob culture, which is very bad news for Prince Harry. Armando, your question. Listen to this.
Bloody hell, that's the Nurofen Plus version, isn't it?
Armando, should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
Acquaintance, old acquaintance? Yes. This is Kirsty Wark-gate. Kirsty Wark, a Newsnight presenter, went on holiday with Scotland's First Minister.
Go on, give us his name, see if you remember. Go on, do it.
Oh, they change every
do
2 months.
Do it. He's a First Minister, for God's sake. Give his name.
McLeish.
No. Not even near.
And, man, no shame on you. He was our second First Minister. Oh. Our first... And don't go looking for the first First Minister, because it's the third First Minister.
So it's the first of four.
We've had three first ministers, but two deputy first ministers.
All right. Have they all gone on holiday with Kirsty Watt? I think they should have Sean Connery as first minister.
Yeah, but he's gone.
Yeah, well, so have all the other first ministers.
Yeah. But he's not resident in Scotland. I mean, since you left Armando, there's only Kirsty, Jack McConnell, and I. And I'm a bit pissed off that I didn't get to go on holiday.
Do you all just bump into each other in the street, just the three of you? It's like in a Richard Curtis film where they all bump into each other in London, don't they?
We meet up every now and again and say, there's been a murder.
Well, anyway, there's been a big stink because the SNP say they should go on holiday with her as well. Impartiality. But all these politicians and journalists, they all sort of know each other. And it's, you know, they're very combative on television, but in private. I mean, much as I hate every fibre in Tony Blair's contemptuous, righteous body, we regularly go fruit picking together. Quite a nice guy.
The political impartiality of Kirsty Walk has been called into question after Scotland's First Minister and his family spent New Year at a holiday home in Mallorca. Walk's Newsnight colleague Jeremy Paxman claimed there was nothing wrong whatever with journalists befriending politicians in a live interview from Michael Howard's country cottage. Alan, what ensured the European Commission was driven crazy this week?
It's a car question.
It is.
It's a motoring question.
It is.
The European Commission question.
It is.
Women drivers were deemed to have been discriminated against in their favour because they were better drivers. And Euro law is now taking into account the fact that they are better drivers than men.
Yes. What? What is this madness you speak? So because women are better drivers than men, they get lower insurance premiums. They should do.
Yeah.
But there's special insurance drivers. Companies now for drivers who sit on the seat sideways. With their legs hanging out the door so that gentlemen can't see their corset when they ride up on their horse.
This is indirect line you're talking about here.
It's just Michael Winner, isn't it?
Do you know, there's a advert on television for the geriatric during the afternoon with all those people who walk into the bath sideways. And one of them involves Doris Hare, which is exactly the same as Michael Winner. Do you remember Doris Hare? She's the spitting image of Michael Winner.
Does she get into the bath going, calm down, dear?
Those sideways baths, though, with the door.
Why doesn't the water come out? I don't know.
I know.
And why do they wear bathing costumes?
You go upstairs to turn the bath on. So you get in your standard lift, you go up the stairs, turn your bath on, go downstairs to rearrange your Daily Mail collected figures of Winston Churchill in various poses. You go back upstairs on your stand lift when the bath is full. Open the door on the side.
Is that why old people are so wrinkled? It's not to do with age or anything. Being stuck in a bath for 24 hours.
I think Stanner designed the Millennium Wheel because that is the least exciting Ferris wheel, isn't it? Nobody is going to be photographed at the bottom going, whoa!
Women drivers are safe from European proposals to increase their insurance premiums to come into line with male drivers. The EC made the claim that insurance companies' policies are sexist. The company's response is the quickest they've ever made on a claim. Before we start the final round, here's a personal ad from the Torbay Herald Express.
Jane, young 60, blonde, easygoing, looking for a tall male who's honest and trustworthy, loves walking, travelling, mucus and horses.
Thanks to Mrs. E. Lee from Paignton for that. Jeremy, listen to this.
Can I take your order, please?
Fast food song by the Fast Food Rockers. Who's asking, do you want push-ups with that?
Oh, this will be the story that fast food places are giving you vouchers for exercise. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's right. And specifically, pizza and another one, KFC,
mm-hmm.
or Kentucky Fried Chicken, as we used to call it in my day. When it first arrived, you could bowl it down the street with a stick. they're giving out gym vouchers to work it off afterwards. Whether they're going to give you vouchers for a triple bypass and a colon replacement operation, I don't know. But you'll be able to go to the gym after you've been to Pizza Hut and throw it all straight back up.
I think the gym is a drive-through, though, isn't it? You don't actually have to go in.
Yeah.
KFC and Pizza Hut outlets in America are offering their customers free gym membership to sweat off the thousands of calories in their meals. Customers will be able to download an activity calculator on the internet if their fingers aren't too fat to use the keyboard. Fred, who didn't get nailed in court this week?
It's Abu Hamza,
mm-hmm.
Who couldn't go into court because his toenails were too long, which is disgusting to think about, and we shouldn't. That should have gone under the Freedom of Information Act. Open brackets, except Abu Hamza's long toenails. We don't want to hear about it. And his lawyer, who's clearly funnier than I am, said it was a long-standing problem.
You know what it's like, though? You're about to go into court to face a terrorism charge, and the embarrassment forgot to cut your toenails.
How long do your toenails have to be?
To stop you
going into court. I don't.
Well, according to the Magna Carta,
yeah, they've just been released under the 500-year rule.
This is maybe slightly dodgy, but am I the only one that's ever wondered, you know, what came first, the hook or the bad eye? If that's outfitted now, whatever you do, Mr. Han. Oh, for God's sake.
Abu Hamza refused to leave his cell to appear on a video link to the Old Bailey, complaining his toenails were too long. Hamza is the most hated man in the prison yard, having burst the prison football on 9 occasions already. Armando, your question. Who's been bowled over by women half their age?
I saw the headline about this and then saw it was about bowling and decided not to carry on reading. I will try and make my answer even more exciting than the game of bowling actually is, if that's possible. There's a competition being organised, I think televised by the BBC, a female bowling championship, and the BBC, or the organisers, have selected bowlers not so much for their skills as for their age and looks. That's the claim.
Yep,
that's
true.
It.
True. And then he's upset all those that I personally find attractive, the 90-year-olds in the Lyle stockings, and the Dubbin boots with the big ooters and the wire glasses that bend down. Drive me mad sometimes.
Actually, I do remember one sentence in the article that said it's upset the vast bulk of professionals.
Resentment this week among women bowls players after the World Bowls Tour apparently only picked the youngest, most glamorous competitors to take part in the televised women's match play event. The main qualities a bowls player needs are a sure eye, a steady hand, and an inability to think of anything else to do between lunch and countdown. Alan, the final question. Which British flyers have managed to outpace Time's winged chariot?
It's very old birds, rather like the bowls thing. I mean, there are 20 species of English bird that are all very old. They live longer in England. You find them. It's things like guillemots sitting around in cardigans with tartan slippers. Reading The Spectator and smoking a pipe. And they're all 45. And it's down to the fact that the world's getting warmer. A lot of others have dropped off the perch, as it were, and are all dead. But these 20 species, including an eagle of some kind, which is the oldest eagle there is, it can't sort of fly. It walks about a lot. Find it urinating in phone booths in Scotland. but there's just these very old feathered things. I don't know why we want them. You don't really want old birds. You wouldn't be underneath a 70-year-old gull. You'd be like a Stuka. Boof. They must be huge. They must crap like cows. But anyway, I don't know why they've got old, but it's something to do with England getting warm enough to
better
accommodate.
Better diet.
Them.
Instead of eating...
They're eating KFC.
Instead of eating worms, which naturalists thought was the natural diet of the bird, they're actually eating junk food. If junk food is so bad for you, why are there so many foxes in our bins looking healthy? And they're all hanging around landfill sites and bins, the birds, and that's why they're all healthy and living longer. Stress is the major cause of bird death, apart from French people making sparrow roulade.
Ornithologists claim that mild winters have enabled British birds to live much longer than before, with 20 species establishing new longevity records. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
Mr. Ernest Cottrell from Bootle in Liverpool sent me this, and this is from a gravestone in a cemetery in Woolwich in South London. Sacred to the memory of Major James Brush, who was killed by the accidental discharge of a pistol by his orderly, 14th of April, 1831. Well done, good and faithful servant.
Anyway, I've got a cutting that's been sent in by Fiona Crawford, and it's a letter written into a newspaper by Margaret Braybrook about the Inland Revenue, who sadly wrote to Margaret about her husband who had died a few months ago. And she couldn't believe her eyes when she opened the letter from the Inland Revenue addressed to her husband to read, "Dear Mr. M.J. Braybrook, deceased. I hope you'll be pleased to hear that. Unless your circumstances change, we're not planning to send you tax returns from now on."
Armando.
This was sent in by Nick Pattinson from Stockport. It's from The Guardian. It says, "Groundsmen at Devizes Cricket Club in Wiltshire were startled when they lit a paraffin-soaked bonfire and a rabbit shot out with its tail ablaze. They did not see where it went, but 30 minutes later their nearby shed went up in flames."
Alan.
Well, Simon, I'm indebted for this one to John Julius Norwich, who spotted it in the Toronto Globe and Mail. "As you grow old, you lose interest in sex, your friends drift away, your children ignore you. There are many other advantages, of course, but these would seem to be the outstanding ones."
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Jeremy and Fred have 15. This week's winners, however, are Alan and Armando with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from Best magazine, sent in by Colin Ferguson.
"Presents with chocolate always go down well in my house, but for a delightful chocky-related gift that kids of all ages can cherish for a long time, check out this lovable cuddly bear with solid milk chocolate balls."
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Fred McCauley, Armando Iannucci and Alan Kyle. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chairman's script was written by George Pearl, Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark, Paul Carenza and Rodri Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.